everybody, and welcome once again to Focus Fire episode number 27. I'm Alan, and always I'm joined by my co-host Jeff Dirty Pool.
What's up, everybody?
Now, Focus Fire is once again a semi-regular competitive 40K podcast aimed at providing you focused and practical advice. Our podcast is brought to you through the TFG Radio Network. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at focusedfirepodcast@gmail.com. Now, you can also check us out on Facebook, and you can search for Focus Fire. Tonight, we're going to be discussing a couple things. One of us went to a tournament a couple weeks ago, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. And we're also going to break down Army-specific secondaries. So let's go ahead and get started. Now, we're receiving two of the very first codexes of 9th edition, and the thing that differentiates them from the other codexes and what has gone before is now that we're getting bespoke secondaries, and we're going to go into a little bit of detail on these secondaries and what we think, and we're going to talk about what we think of them. So, Jeff, you want to go ahead and take us away?
Yeah, so the new codexes have, each of them so far has three codex-specific secondaries. They kind of act like other secondaries in that they belong to one of the main category. Each one belongs to one of the main categories from the GT 2020 packet. You have things like some in the Marine Codex are from Purge the Enemy, No Mercy, No Respite, Battlefield Supremacy. And the restriction is, you know, you can take these if you have a pure army. The only exception being Space Marines, you're allowed to take Imperial Agents in your Space Marine army and still have access to these Codex-specific secondaries as long as your Warlord is from the Space Marine. Now, you can only pick one, but what this does is it opens up a whole new design space for building lists and choosing secondaries, because I don't know about you, Alan, but when I'm first testing out an army, if I haven't specifically tailored it to play to secondary missions, I usually have one or two that I can get, and then that third one is always like up in the air. Is that something you find that's kind of part of your process when you play games?
Pretty much. When you build an army, you need to reliably be able to count on achieving at least 10 points in two secondaries. And then the third one is usually flexible, and you can choose it based on the army composition of your opponent or how many objectives there are or what type of matchup you're getting. So, yeah, that's pretty much how I choose my army and focus my secondaries.
Yeah, so let's just dive right into it. I mean, you know, obviously go ahead.
I'd like to say a few things about the preamble was, first of all, you can only choose one of them, because I was worried about if we're getting bespoke, if they were really, you know, unbalanced, I was worried, you know, well, I'll just take three out of a codex and then, you know, I'll have access to these secondaries that nobody else will have. And I like that they selected it so that you can only choose one secondary. I think that's really good. So in case you do get a bunch of unbalanced ones, you're only getting one, and the other two is basically going to be a common one that either player can choose. And the other thing I like is that they still are in categories. So if you do have a good one, let's say it's in a Battlefield Supremacy category, well, then you will still, and that's one of the things that your army does really well, you know, you won't be able to take a rule book Battlefield Supremacy. So I like as they kind of put a little bit of a check in just in case for balance issues.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, Alan, is that these all compete with other generic secondaries in their category. So, like, the question we have here on our podcast is, are they worth it in the competitive setting? You know, Space Marines, we'll start with them. They're obviously the powerhouse of 8th edition, the end of 8th edition, and have been making really strong showings in 9th edition. Their codex certainly tones them down, but at the same time introduces a swath of new units that are more powerful than the ones that came before. Blade Guard veterans can go up to six. Eradicators, the bikes with the ATVs that you can bring back to life, all kinds of crazy shit that they can do. And in addition to that, they get access to some of these secondaries. So I'll do the first one, which is called...
I feel like this... To speak a little bit more about the Space Marine Codex, I feel like this is almost like an index for the Space Marines, whereas it's kind of like, you know, a blank slate where, like, all the factions can kind of, like, it's a sandbox for them to play in. And then we're going to get specific codexes and supplements later on to really, really bring the units alive and really bring these armies to their ultimate power. But right now, I think it's pretty much toned down. It's kind of like a little bit for everybody to choose from. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So the first one from the Marine Codex is called Codex Warfare, and it's in the Purge the Enemy category. So this is competing with Bring It Down and Assassinate. So, you know, it's got to be pretty good in order to be something you want to build your army around. And it's pretty hard to do. What it is you get a point for killing enemy units with certain weapons while in the corresponding doctrine. So heavy weapons and I think grenades in Devastator, rapid fire and assault in the tactical doctrine, and then in the assault doctrine, it's pistols and melee weapons. And you can get up to 5 points for each doctrine that you're in. So this seems like the weaker one of the bunch, because it's, you know, you're only in Devastators for one turn, and you got to be able to kill five things with, not just kill five things in your first turn when Devastator Doctrine is still active. You have to kill them with heavy weapons. So you have to, like, you have to bring enough heavy weapons to kill five separate units to get the, if you're wanting planning and maxing this out. But I mean, I could see it being like something that you might bring, and, you know, you have a couple of heavy weapons with the loss of the grav stratagem, you know, that might not be something that Marines bring anymore. But, you know, you could probably get, you know, two or three, maybe two kills with in your Devastator Doctrine, then do two turns of Tactical Doctrine, and then, you know, two or three turns of Assault Doctrine. You might be able to rack up, you know, 10, 12 points with that. But, you know, it also requires you to kill a whole unit, and you have to kill it with specific weapons. So you're kind of hamstringing how you play the game. My thoughts on it is it's not a good option unless, you know, you're kind of scraping the barrel for secondaries on what to pick against your opponent. What are your thoughts on this one, Alan?
I agree 100%. I do not like this one at all, because as a general rule, the way I value secondaries is I kind of look at them as either 10 easy points is a good one. If there's an easy way to get 10 points, you know, I'll kind of like it. Or if it's quite possible, but it's a little bit iffy to get 15 points, I think that's kind of a good one. This one, it's so hard to get anything with this. You have to kill the right units with the right weapons in the Devastator Doctrine, 5 units in Devastator Doctrine, 5 units in Tactical Doctrine, and 5 units in Assault Doctrine. Now, That's 15 units you have to kill to get 15 points, or just 10 units. If it's just killing 10 units, it'd be difficult, but you killing the right units at the right time with the right weapons, that is a really hard task. So I don't rate this one at all.
Yeah. You want to read the next one, or do you want me to go through them?
Sure. The next one is Battlefield Supremacy category. So it's up against Engage on All Fronts, Line Breaker, and Domination, so the mobility is secondaries. This one is called Shock Tactics. Score 3 victory points at the end of the battle round if you control one or more objective markers that were controlled by your opponent at the start of the battle round, and Adeptus Astartes unit from your army is within range of that objective marker. So basically what it says is that your opponent needs to control it at the beginning of previously, and then you have to either shoot them off it and be near it or take control of it. Now, you do get 3 victory points from it, and so it's kind of hard to do in the first round. I see it's possible, especially if you're White Scars or something like that, or Space Wolves. Maybe you can get about 9 victory points from this, but I don't know. I haven't really made up my mind if how hard it is to do. What do you think about this one, Jeff?
So this one is, I like this one because it's already something you want to be doing in your game plan, is you want to be taking objectives away from your opponent, right? You want to kill the things that they have on the objective and take the objective. It's a little wonky because it's a secondary that you want to take if you're going second, because at the start of the battle round, your opponent's going first. They have that objective, and then you can take it from them at your turn. However, I don't even see it as a 9-1, because if things are going your way, you're going to be, you know, well, I guess that you can probably get 9, maybe 12 on this one. You're not going to get the first battle round, and then you're going to be trading your units to take your opponent off objectives and get 3 points for it. So it's not the worst one of the bunch. I put it in the middle of the three. But it is, it's hard to do it, like Alan said, unless you're playing an aggressive army that's going to be moving up and taking objectives from people. I don't know. I get this one is kind of like a middle of the ground for me, middle of the pack for me. And I don't know if it's better than engage in all fronts. You know, because if engage in all fronts, all you got to do is move one unit into a quarter and you get 2 points. And you move another one into another quarter, you get 3 points. So that's way easier to control. It doesn't require you to kill anything. You know, but I do like this one because it rewards you for doing what you want to be doing for the primary mission. It's just the only thing I don't like about it is you can't control if you're going first or second. And if you have this secondary objective and you go first, it's really hard because that means you have to your opponent has to be holding it at the start of your turn. You have to walk up to it, kill them, and then you have to hold it. You have to survive their turn. So these kind of secondaries that are skewed for like better for first or better for second, I don't like those because you choose them before you know whether you're going first or second, and if you get the wrong turn order, it can really screw up your ability to score secondaries.
Yeah, it is in the battlefield supremacy category. It's like I said, so it is up against other good secondaries from the main book. But you are competing, you know, for hold of the most objectives. So you know, in 5 and 6 objectives, there's going to be this kind of a scramble for those middle objectives, and you're going to be able to knock them off and push them back. So not only are you achieving the primary objective, but you're also getting the bonus of the secondary. So I don't rate it as too bad, but I like to see it in play a little bit more, but might be a little bit iffy about. But I figure you could probably get 6 points. Struggle for 9 and have trouble above 9.
Yeah, I don't think you can get over. I think if you're getting 12, you're already killing your opponent and destroying it. This is kind of one of those. I don't know if it's a win more secondary, but so the next one is Oaths of Moment. It's in the No Mercy, No Respite, which competes with While We Stand, We Fight, Grind Them Down, and Thin Their Ranks. So you know these are a lot of people are starting to build for While We Stand, We Fight. Myself included. I've loved this secondary since I saw it. It's just, you know, it's cool to take that. So it competes with a lot of things, but it's really kind of a funky one because it's at the end of your turn, you get, or into the battle round, I'm sorry, you get a point for each one of, there's 3 things you can do and you get 1 or 2 points for doing them. Well, the first one is you get a point if you killed a character, a vehicle, or a monster with your Space Marines during the battle round. You get another point if none of your Adeptus Astartes fail the morale or fell back. And you get 2 points if at the end of the battle round, an Adeptus Astartes unit from your army is wholly within 6 of the center of the battlefield. So a lot of these are easy because you have complete control of them, right? Like you choose whether you want to put a unit wholly within 6 inches of the center of the battlefield. You choose if you fall back or not. You choose if you kill a vehicle or a monster. You can't really choose to control your morale, but it's Space Marine, so that you're not likely to even have morale as an issue. And if you have the, if you do, it is what it is, you know, but it's only 1 point. So I like this one because of that, but it's also pushing you to go second. It's just like the one we just talked about prior to this is you want it, since it's into the battle round, you want to be going second, and you want to be able to jump a unit into the middle of the board to get those 2 points from this. This is why I really see this as like a is this secondary is 2 points for being in the middle of the board, and then an extra point or two if you're killing something or not failing around, not falling back. Now, I really like this this one because it also, you know, it lets you double stack on things like Bring It Down and Assassinate, which are from Purge the Enemy. Because if let's say your opponent has a bunch of vehicles and monsters, you can get points for killing them with Bring It Down, and then also points off of this for killing them as well. And it also lets you, you know, you're seeing a lot of these lists where they have like three rhinos or two monsters or something, you know, or, you know, just a small number of vehicles or monsters because they don't want to give up Bring It Down. But this allows you to still get points off of those every turn for killing one of them a turn. Which is kind of, I think, a neat way to, you know, build a secondary to counter these, like, anti-secondary list choices that people are going with. My last kind of comment is, it forces your opponent to try and kill your units. And even if you're going first in this one, you place a unit in the middle. And then you place units on the objectives on the sides or whatever in the middle of the board. And now your opponent has to not only kill your units that are on the objectives to deny you primary mission points, but then he has to also kill a unit of yours that's in the center of the table that's not necessarily scoring any primary points, but it's scoring you secondary points. So it's adding another problem for your opponent to fix, which is something I like. Of all the three, I think this is my favorite one because it has the most complexity to it. What are your thoughts on it, Alan?
This is without a doubt my favorite Space Marine secondary mission. I think with Oath of Honor, you get 1 point if you just don't run away, if you don't fail a morale check. That's almost like 5 points guaranteed. I can't tell you the last time I had a Space Marine blow a morale check, especially when they're running around in 3 and 5 man units. Are they gonna run away? Are they gonna fail morale roll? No, unless you have some severe leadership shenanigans on the other side of the table. It's almost a guaranteed 5 points. And then you just need a unit for 2 points you get for a unit within 6 inches of the center of the battlefield. You could do that for 3 turns easy. So that's 5 plus what? Probably 6 points right there. And then you just kill like a character or a couple of vehicles and you'll get like 3 points there. It seems like it's an easy 14 points and quite easy to get up to 15. So
yeah.
I rate this one pretty high.
Yeah, for me, the thing I, and we'll get into this later, but the thing that really bothers me about this secondary is that there's 20 possible points. 20 possible points. Just think about that. I mean, it's like the only one that's comparable is Linebreaker, I think, which is four points each turn. But good luck getting 2 units into your opponent's deployment zone on turn one, right? I mean, that's really hard to do. So I don't like that there's 20 points in this from a design perspective. It's great if you're playing Space Marines because you have 20 possible points and all you have to do is get 15 of them. And as Alan was mentioning, 5 of them are really easy. And the other, the 2-point one for being in the center of the board is really easy too, you know? And it's kind of, you know, this edition's turning out to be a lot about scrumming in the middle of the table. So you're obviously going to want to have things in the middle of the table anyway, so. I rate this one pretty high. So why don't we go on? Well, I guess, Alan, do you have any comments on like what you think this does for Space Marines competitively in the meta with having these secondary options?
Well, like I said, I don't rate the other two very high, but No Mercy, No Respite. And it's also in it's actually Oath of Movement, I should say. In the No Mercy, No Respite, they're going against thin the ranks, which you're never going to take unless you're going up against a gigantic horde. Grind them down, which is, you know, you have to kill more units than you. You have to kill more units, which is, you know, it's okay. And while we stand, we fight, which the Marines kind of like, and which we're seeing a little bit more now because characters are more in a support role, and we have a lot less characters now, but. I think this one's going to be taken almost all the time because it seems like it's just pretty easy to get. So now it's going to be like Space Marines have one objective where they're going to get pretty easy to max out on one secondary. So that's gonna help them out a little bit as far as bumping for their power level.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's get into the Necron ones then. We'll switch up, see if they how they compare. You want to do the first one?
Sure. The Necrons have the same thing. You have to have the Necrons keyword. Not that the Necrons take a whole lot of allies, but just in case. And it's the same thing as the Space Marines. You're only allowed one. Now, the first one is in the No Mercy, No Respite, the one we just talked about with the thin ranks, grind them down, and while we stand, we fight. This one is Code of Combat. You score 3 victory points at the end of the battle for each enemy unit that was destroyed by a Necron's Noble unit from your army. Now, let's talk about what is a Necron Noble unit. These are basically your HQs. They have to have the keyword Noble. Basically, half of your named characters have it. And then your lords and your overlords have it. Now, they are not great dealers of death. They're not going to run around killing and chopping and shooting like crazy. Necron characters, you know, they're good and they have their moments, but are they going to be killing units wholesale? No. But there's one exception to this rule. The Silent King has the Noble keyword, and the Noble and the Silent King will be able to dish out and do damage to a lot of units and kill a lot of units. Now, the problem is, now if you do take the secondary, now if you do have the Silent King, that puts a target on the Silent King, because if the Silent King then goes tits up, then you're going to struggle to fulfill the secondary. So if you take the Silent King, it might be something, depending on the look of your opponent's army, if they're going to kill your Silent King or not, if they have that ability, if he's able to get a lot of cheap kills, I think this is a very good secondary mission. Otherwise, I don't rate it very highly.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said except your comment about the Silent King. I mean, to me, the Silent King is unlikely to kill 5 units in the game. Like, his obelisks do not have the Noble keyword, so they will not trigger 3 points for everything that they kill. And the Silent King doesn't really, he has some chip shooting damage. Like, maybe if, like, you kind of have to choreograph it so he could get kills, because you could, like, you know, maybe leave a squad at one guy and then you're another squad at one guy, and then the Silent King splits his shooting. So he has, like, I think he has, like, 2 guns or something like that. They're not even very good. But, you know, splits his shooting and gets those 2 kills. That's a kind of a cool thing. But my biggest problem is, look, the Silent King's going to get, he needs to get into combat to kill 5 units. And guess what? He's not going to get into combat. He's a T7, 16 wound model with a 4-up save, invulnerable save. That's worse than an Imperial Knight. And guess what? People kill an Imperial Knight in 1 round of shooting without a sweat. In this game, like, it's been like that for 2 years. Like, killing an Imperial Knight is like a standard. Like, you're like, can I kill an Imperial Knight in 1 turn of shooting? Can't check yes or no. I mean, like, multi-miltas just went bananas. They literally doubled in efficiency, and they're wounding this guy on 3s, and they'll be just acing him. Like a battle sister or a Sisters of Battle Retributor squad with 4 multi-miltas can pop out, get +1 damage, +1 to wound or some shit, and just ace that guy, or a unit of eradicators. I mean, like, haywire bikes, you know, like the Silent King is, to me, in my opinion, not a durable model. It has worse defensive stat lines than a knight. I don't know how many points it is, but I imagine it's somewhere comparable to a knight, maybe a little less, but it doesn't even, to me, it doesn't even have that much of a damage output. But it's more like the other characters in the Necron Codex, which are support characters. So I definitely do not rate this one. Would not do.
Yeah, you're gonna have 2 or 3 characters running around that will have the Noble keyword, and just the you'll have to have your Noble in combat or some way of killing units, and then you have to coordinate to like you said, to blow them down to 1 model and then have them finish up. There's just so many hoops that you have to jump through that it's just very unlikely that you're gonna go ahead and get any points out of that.
Yeah, to me, a catacomb command barge would be, if you have like 2 shooty catacomb command barges, that's one way to do it, because it's like you have to choreograph it, right? Because he has to be the one to, like, if you leave a, you know, 2 guys left, he just picks it up, boom, 3 points. That like, if you're doing 2 catacomb command barges, maybe you think about this, the secondary objective, because they're not targetable. And they do have some shooting. They have like they can take like a heavy gauss cannon or some shit and like a stack of light. So they can like they can get two weapons and they could reasonably kill one or two models that are left in a unit that something else in your army has already chipped away at. So, you know.
But the amount of hoops you have to jump through to get this one, I just don't see it being very practical. But who knows?
Yeah, I would.
Go ahead and take us to the next one, Jeff.
The next one is Purge the Venom. So this is a Battlefield Supremacy category, which again is we're completing with the movement-based ones, engage on all fronts, line breaker, domination. So this one's kind of wacky. You get 2 points at the end of your turn for each table quarter that does not have enemy models wholly within it. And it's important, wholly within. You can't score a turn one. So it has a maximum of... this one's kind of wild because it has a you can get 0 points and you can also get up to if you tabled your opponent you can get 8 points, but that's not really a reality. The reality is you're going to get like 2 to 6 points on this, most likely 4. Like if you're pushing your opponent, keeping them on their half of the board, you're getting 4 points a turn for turns 2, 3, 4, and 5, which is 16 points. That's max points. However, So you're thinking about like, oh, if I can just keep them in their zone, it's easy. And all I got to do is I can kill things on my turn and qualify this objective. It seems easy, right? But to me, this is much harder to do than engage on all fronts. Like, and, you know, Necrons aren't the fastest people, but they do have, you know, Tomb Blades and Deep Striking and all kinds of, like Scarabs and things like this that can easily get engaged on all fronts. And to me, that seems like a much better secondary here because your opponent they already want to be pushing into your half of the board. Like that's their battle plan. Like no army in ninth edition just sits in their half of the board and shoots you and expects to win. They're all going to be aggressively coming at the middle of the board and they're going to be trying to cross line of scrimmage. It's like playing football. You know, you're trying to get past line of scrimmage, they're trying to get past the line of scrimmage, and everyone's scrumming in the middle. So your opponent already is incentivized to go into your quarters, and now you're just giving them more reason. And they're probably taking engage on all fronts, right? And so they're already sending guys into your quarters, and then you have to kill them. And now you're now taking your killing focus away from killing your opponent's army that's sitting on the objectives, and you're focusing it instead on killing your opponent's armies that are just sitting out in the middle of nowhere, which is not a good idea in my opinion. This one, look, you're playing Ninth Edition. Your focus needs to be on killing your opponent's stuff that's on the objectives so that you can deny them scoring points. There's a lot of other things you might need to be doing, but you definitely don't want to put your victory conditions on killing other shit that's not on an objective. Like when you take this, your opponent's going to pop something into one of your behind a building out of line of sight, you know, deep strike something in your deployment zone, and then suddenly you're screwed because you're like, well, I was hoping to get 4 points a turn. Now I'm down to 2. Maybe I'm getting 0, you know, like if you can't kill that unit. This just seems like a really poor choice to me because it forces you to do something that you don't want to do in the mission already.
I kind of rate this one as okay. Now, usually there's always that last table quarter that you can usually hold pretty good, which is your castle from your deployment zone. And then you only have to clear them out of one other table quarter for additional points. So basically, if you can clear them out of 2 table quarters for the game, that's 12 victory points. So how many points is that?
16.
4? 16. Yeah, so all you have to do is clear them out of, you know, 2 table quarters for 4 turns. And people don't want to be spread out all over the table. People don't want to be all over the table with durable units and multiple redundant units. So they might have just like usually a token force in table quarters. And if you just kill them, then they're going to struggle to put something else back in that unit or split their force up. So I kind of rate this one as being okay. I kind of actually like this one because I think you can concentrate and hold one table quarter and then kill your opponent out of another table quarter to get to get at least probably four a turn. And then hopefully by the end of the turn, end of the game, you might have killed enough and they might struggle to hold any table quarters besides one or two. So I kind of rate this one as being a little bit better. Now, the problem is, there's always counters. So if you take this objective and your opponent knows that you took it, he might then go into multiple table quarters with a little bit more, durable units, with a little bit more redundancy, but then he'll be splitting up his main force and making him a little bit weaker. So this is one I'd like to see how it plays on the tabletop, but I kind of, just from the ballpark and just looking at it and thinking about it, I kind of like this one.
Yeah, that's fair. Why don't you tell us about the last Necron one?
The last one is also in Battlefield Supremacy, so is Treasures of the Eons. Now, Treasures of the Eons, when you select the secondary objectives, then after both sides have finished deploying, your opponent selects three objective markers on the battlefield. Score a number of victory points at the end of your turn if you control one or more of these objective markers as shown in the table below.
Are you talking about ancient machineries from Shadow Operations?
Oh, sorry.
You said something that was like totally not the right thing. So, oh, there's four. Shit. Okay. Wow. Go ahead. Sorry, my mistake.
And you are correct. I okay. So basically, now there's a few things. No. Oh no, that's podcasting gold. So basically, the first thing is that you're now. Let me tell you. Now, if you control one of these selected objectives, you score 2 points. If you hold two objectives, you score 3 points. And if you hold all three of these selected objectives, you score 5 points. So, now remember, first of all, your opponent selects these objectives. And number two, these are the ones have to be, I believe, they have to be outside of your deployment zones.
No,
they
don't.
That's not true. Sorry. So, when would this be good? The fewer victory points you have, fewer objectives on the table, the better this secondary is. The reason why is, let's say there's four objectives on the table. Two of them could be on his side of the table. One will be on your side of the table. And even with five objectives, generally two will be like on his side of the table. One will be in the center of the table. So if you find and control the center of the table, if you hold that objective, you'll score two additional victory points. And remember, you want to be holding objectives anyways in this. So this goes well with all the primary objectives. And best, especially if you only have like four objectives, I think this one's really good because you can hold one and then you might be able to battle for two, giving you three turns. So I kind of rate this one as pretty good.
Yeah, this one is, to me, it's really matchup mission specific. So if your opponent has one in their deployment zone, it's okay because you're going to have two in the center of the table somewhere within striking distance of you. And if you hold those two at the end of your turn, I like this because it's the end of your turn. That's why I like domination as well. So like, you can control it. There's nothing they can do to interrupt it. All you got to do is walk over and control it. My only thing is, you get 3 points if you do that. And, you might not be able to do that on turn one. So you're looking at 9 points, probably maybe 12. On missions where you have there's two objectives that are close to them and that you don't really have a chance of controlling. I don't like this one because then it becomes too easy for them to just keep you on one of those objectives. And it allows your opponent to just dictate the battle. Necrons aren't the most aggressive close combat army. And so your opponent's just going to go, okay, well, I'm going to pick the one in my deployment zone and these two on this flank, and I'm going to put my really strong melee units over here. And if you come over and you're even near this, I'm going to kill you and possibly tri-point you. And then you have to spend a CP to get out. This one, it seems good, but I think you'd have to see. It's really specific to how the the objective markers are placed in each specific mission.
Right. You'll need to see where the objective markers are placed, how many objective markers, and then compare that with your opponent's army as to whether or not how easy this will be to achieve. But with the, in the right circumstances, I kind of rate this one as being pretty good. But yeah. Otherwise, I don't rate it very high.
Yeah. The next one is Ancient Machineries. Apparently the fourth one. I was like, I can't read. This one is in a shadow operation, so it competes with raised banners, deploy scramblers, and the other two that no one picks. So your army can scan up, quote unquote, scan up the three objectives in the middle of the board that weren't in anyone's deployment zone. These objectives are, so you and your opponent go back and forth selecting what these objectives are, but it's essentially three objectives in the middle of the board. And if you survive until your next command phase, you get 3 points per objective scanned. So it's, you know, you're giving up your shooting because you have to do an action on multiple units. You can potentially score 9 per turn, and if there's a lot of, if there's three objectives in the midfield, but you cannot even start the action if there's an enemy in range of the objective. So this is like my problem with raised banners is it's too easy for your opponent to deny you taking the action in the first place. All your opponent has to do is leave one guy there at the end of his turn, and then you can't kill it in your movement phase, so you're going to be fucked because you can't start the action. So like this one, I don't really see it. Not only do you have to not have your opponent in the middle of the field, like if this was your own, like raise the banners, at least you can do it on your own objectives once you're in your quote unquote zone. This one, it's going to be in the middle of the board, and so you don't even have that safety net of the one back in your home base, if you will. So you're going to be having to make sure that there's no one there at the start of your turn, which is unlikely. I mean, people are going to be contesting the objectives. Every game of 9th edition I've played so far, everyone's scrumming over most of the objectives in the center of the board. So starting an action at the start of your, or at the end of your movement phase and hoping that there's no one on these objectives is going to be rare, in my opinion. You know, so, and you can't even score on turn 5. You can't score turn 1 because you're not going to be able to do the action before the game starts, obviously. And if you do the action on turn 5, you don't get to your next command phase, so, because there's no turn 6. So you have, you know, if you do it on turn 1, starting from turn 1, you get to score on turn 2, 3, 4, and potentially 5. So 4 turns to score. It does have possible points of 9 per turn, so that's, you know, 9 times 4 is, what, 36. So that's a very high ceiling, but it's all the, like, hoops you need to jump through seems, like, way too much for this. It's for the same reason I don't like raised banners, I don't like this one.
Yeah, you have to perform actions in the middle of the table, and that's always going to be really dicey. So, you know, you can perform the action with a core or canoptic, so a lot of things can perform the actions, and I don't know, Necron shooting from the core is like, you know, it's okay. So, you know, I don't think you're missing that much. And you have the potential for gaining a lot of points. But, you know, just performing an action with no enemy units around in the middle of the table in no man's land is going to be, it's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah, I see this as like, this is like a win more secondary. You know, if you're able to make sure your opponent's not on an on like two objectives in the middle of the board at the start of your turn, and you keep it till the end of the next turn, or the start of your next turn, you do that 3 times in a game, you probably already won the game. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know. To me, this seems like something, if you build like a warrior spam list or something that like gets that, you know, pregame advanced move and deceivers a couple of big warrior blobs up to kind of just corral your opponent into their deployment zone, it could work because, you know, you don't really care about your warrior shooting. It's not that great. And, you know, you can do that, but that really relies on you going first and denying your opponent the ability to get out of his deployment zone.
Yeah. I really want to see what successful Necron builds kind of look like in 9th edition before I can, it's really hard to judge some of these secondaries. Like if you have like Satans and like big scary units now, that are available to push your opponents back a little bit and give you a little bit of a cushion where you're where your warriors can stand on some objectives and perform some actions. It might not be too bad, but I want to see, you know, I need to see how these Necron armies kind of really work and what the successful builds are going to be before I can say with any certainty if some of these secondaries are decent.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. To me, the Necron Codex is a mystery. We have some Necron players in our area, but we'll see what, you know, when they can play. So the last thing I want to talk about, and I think we're, you know, we've been gone for quite a while here. So I think, you know, it's an existential question, really. Are these army-specific secondaries good for the game? Should the missions that we play competitively be army agnostic, or are we as a community okay with these bespoke secondaries for specific codexes? You know, putting my opinion is no. Putting aside the fluff, I mean, I like the idea of like mission, codex specific secondaries for fluff reasons, and then like, you know, crusade games or narrative games, open play, real good in a competitive environment. On a fundamental level, putting in different secondaries creates even more opportunity for imbalance. Just look at Oath of the Moment. It has 20 possible points, and they're all really easy to, you know, for the most part, to achieve. You know, you could totally flub on killing any vehicles, monsters, and characters and still get 15 points from Oath of the Moment. That is really strong for already a strong codex. Like, of all the ones we just went through, Oath of Moment is, in my opinion, the strongest. And guess what? It's for the Space Marine Codex. So we already have to deal with Games Workshop, their inability to create a relatively balanced game. There's a lot of controversy over the GT missions, you know, like whether they're better or worse than the ITC missions. Whether they favor going first or second, you know, I don't really have an opinion one way or the other, but there's already a lot of controversy on that. And now you're adding in this additional layer, which can compound the problem. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this, Alan? What do you think from like an existential point of view? Like, is this something that should be part of our game?
I kind of like them as long as they can balance them well. Now, I do like, even if they can balance them well. Now, even if they can't balance them well, I like that there's only one of them that will throw the a wrench in the works. Now, when we used to play with those cards, when you used to draw the cards for objectives and whatever, we never played with them in America, especially on the West Coast where we always played ITC. But when I played in the London GT, we played where we drew the cards to see what objective you had to take and hold and whatever. And every army had additional cards and additional objectives that they had that you could throw into your deck. But nobody ever played with those. They were always kind of left out. And I kind of felt that was kind of a shame. I kind of like that. But the problem is, you know, especially in a competitive format, balance is the most important thing. And if it really unbalances the game, then it's bad for the game. So as long as they're not too crazy, I kind of like the variety, and I kind of like the bespoke ones. Now, you said, you know, that some of them are going to be your army, you know, are going to be able to accomplish easier than others. You're going to have that with secondaries anyways out of the main rule book, just because of what army you play and what army your build is. Some armies, their codex are just super fast and super mobile, so they're able to get, like, you know, engage on all fronts so easily, whereas some armies are just slow and ponderous and they're not able to. So there's always going to be a little bit of an imbalance anyways about what secondaries you can and can't get. So that just adds to it, I believe. And like I said, it's only one. So as long as they're balanced with the codex, with the main rule book secondaries, where it's not like, okay, free 15 points, and then I got to figure out two other secondaries I have to take, then it's okay. From what I can see, the Necron ones are okay. You know, nothing really too crazy. But that one Space Marine one is a little bit too easy to get. So we're probably going to see that a lot, but we'll see how it shakes out. But I kind of like having the custom secondaries.
Yeah, I mean that's fair. I mean, it really this is kind of an academic discussion because from what I understand, GTs are already letting people play with them, and I'm for me, it's like I don't put much stock in the argument or the conversation about whether we should wait for everyone to get theirs before we let them in. I'm if we're gonna play with them, just let them come in as they come out. To me though, I understand what you're saying, Alan, about like, you know, some armies can get engaged on all fronts easier, and you know, some armies can build for a while with Sami fight, whatever. But the difference between that and, for instance, Oath of Moment is that everyone has access to engage them all fronts. While we stand, we fight, grind them down, all these other ones, you know, and it's, you're already seeing secondary skew the meta. I mean, like vehicle heavy lists and hordes give up an easy 15 points with, bring it down and thin their ranks. And that already is a chip on the, not chip, but a strike, a check mark against those kind of lists. And so now you're compounding it by giving the most, arguably the best codex in the game a kind of a no-brainer secondary. Like, when would you not take Oath of Moment? All you have to do is kill a few, even if you kill zero characters and your opponent has no vehicles and no monsters, if you're within the center of the board for three turns or four or five turns and you don't fail morale and don't fall back, you get 15 points. So it's like, to me, it is already showing the imbalance, and I personally don't think that is a good thing. I think the missions that we play should be agnostic and should provide every army an equal footing, because then you're not throwing an additional layer of imbalance that compounds the problem. Like, Space Marines are already really powerful because they have stupid units like Eradicators who are pointed so efficiently and can kill anything that they point their guns at and shoot twice. You know, they took away shoot twice from aggressors because presumably because it was too powerful. And then they just gave it to this crazy multi-melta unit that can just destroy anything it looks at. And then you know, Blade Guard veterans, all these things that, you know, Marines have that are very good. And suddenly you give them a good, so they're, you know, they're already top of the meta. Then you give them a secondary that they will almost always take and get 15 points off of. And even if they, on a bad game, if you only get, you know, the center of the table three turns and you kill two vehicles and you fail morale twice. So you get 3 points for morale, 6 points for the center, gets you a 12, and you kill two characters or three vehicles or whatever, that's 15 points. And that's on a bad game, like where people were keeping you out of the middle for, you know, three of the five turns, et cetera. So to me, it's already showing the kind of my reluctance to trust Games Workshop to get it right in this kind of, you know, I understand your limiting factors that you've been talking about, like, hey, you can only choose one, it competes with everything else, but, you know, like, the missions that we play should be agnostic, because I don't think we should compound imbalance anymore.
The more I think about it, the more I think you might be right, because it's almost like my Forge World argument is like, if it's really good, you'll see it all the time and everybody will always use it, or they're going to be all bad and then you're just never going to see it again. So it has the potential to have one of, they're probably just going to be three sucky ones, and then one of them's going to be like super good. And it's just so hard to balance. Like, you look at psychic powers and a bunch of other things, it's really hard to balance everything. Everybody looks at like one thing or one strat or one thing is, and like, wow, that's really powerful, and build around it. And I think the secondaries are the same way. It's like, it's just really hard to balance three secondaries. They're either going to be really easy or going to be really hard, and you'll never see them. So that's why I kind of think that maybe we should do without them. But, you know, I think the community is probably okay with it as a whole, and they're going to accept it, and everybody's going to get them as they trickle out, and some codexes will have awesome, one good one, and other ones will have like ones they're just going to ignore.
Yeah. And like I said, it's an academic conversation really, because I think people are using them, so it doesn't really matter, right? I very much doubt that, you know, ITC, LVO, SoCal, the guys at Frontline Gamers are going to come out and say, no, we're not using these.
Frontline Gaming at this point is like an arm of GW. They won't criticize GW, and they'll do whatever GW does. So they're fully on board. So we'll see what the – so I don't really have hope. If there's any imbalances or anything changing that needs to be done, I don't see it coming from them.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's our review of the Army-specific secondaries that we have to date. You know, if you'd like to comment on what your thoughts are, hit us up on Facebook. Let us know what your comments are. What do you think about these crazy secondaries?
Also, California still hasn't opened up. How many months has it been in? 6 months now? Or I saw the stats. LA County had one COVID-related death in the whole county and there's like 10 million people who live in Los Angeles County. One person died, and they won't open it up. But Orange County, you know, is wide open. Everything's like coming and going. Nobody's thinking twice of it. But we're going to have to wait till after the election, because we're living in a blue state, for them to open up. And they said as much in some leaked mail. So we're just going to have to wait. So, but there is one RTT down in Orange County. So we're going to have to drive for about an hour. Me and Jeff are going to try to get to, I think it's on the 14th of November, maybe?
21st or something. It's
so like a week before Thanksgiving, maybe?
Yeah, we'll go play an RTT. Hopefully, you know, it's COVID mandatory masks and sanitizing, temperatures taken beforehand. It's a small RTT, limited number of people, from some buddies of ours who are down there. So it will be streamed. Dice Hammer is streaming it. I know that, so it'll be streaming the top tables. If you guys want to check it out, November 21st. What are you gonna bring?
I'm gonna bring Magnus. I'm gonna bring the big dog. He's gonna eat.
Oh my God, Magnus! So like I was just, you know, playing around on my battle scribe the other day, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna build a list with Magnus in it, and then like an hour later, Magnus wasn't in the list. You know, like oh my God, he's so great, but it's just like. You know, his problems. Why don't you tell us about him?
Well, I kind of just his ability to dish damage and go where you want to go. And he's a problem solver. If you have a problem, he will solve it. he can death hex somebody's invulnerable save and hack down almost anything in the game, including knights. And just the amount of damage you can do with just his psychic powers. He has certain weaknesses. That he can be killed. He's not, you know, immortal. And, but, you know, nowadays with the reserve option, I have to go through various codexes. I need to look at my opponent's list and see if they have the ability to damage Magnus greatly on turn one. If they have that ability, I'm just going to have to put him in reserve. And even in reserve, if you come in reserve, can you warp time? Is there any...
No,
any restriction on that?
You
I was hoping they remove that. But even coming in from reserve in your own deployment zone, he has enough range that he will do a tremendous amount of damage just from his psychic powers. So I'm basically going to run the list I ran last year of, you know, the invulnerable super chicken. Now, I won't be able to take the Warlord trait of minus one damage, which kind of sucks, but he will still have the three up invulnerable save, and he will either be minus... Actually, I saw people take... You like the minus one to hit, but I've seen some people start taking the... he basically has a feel no pain option, and I think the feel no pain option might be a little bit better for him. But I don't know. I'm not very lucky, so maybe the minus one to hit might be better for me.
Yeah.
So Super Chicken and Magnus, and I thought, you know, there's a lot of buff powers that the Thousand Sons have. Now, the Thousand Sons have kind of been limited because they don't have the Supreme Command Detachment as we knew it in 8th edition, so you're kind of dealing with a battalion, so you're dealing with, what, 3 HQs max, and maybe if you want to, you can have a solo caster Zangor Shaman in your group as well. But I thought, you know, screw this. Not, I won't have the, if you take a Rubric, the Scarab Occult Terminators and Rubric Space Marines, they each have a power with their sorcerers, and I'll figure, I'll put the buffs on them, and I'm just going to go pure offense with what casters I have. So I'm just going to try to dish out as much damage I can and just chuck mortal wounds across the table and see if that'll work.
Yeah, we'll see. That'll be interesting. We'll definitely keep you guys updated on our list. I think we'll probably end up doing another episode in between now and that RTT. It's like a month away. So we probably won't do an episode, you know, well, actually, yes, we will, because we do it every 2 weeks or so. So we'll do an episode prior to that. We'll finalize our list for you guys and let you guys know what we're going to be bringing, what we think we'll face, you know, from some of the people who are also attending, who we know, and just kind of do a quick meta-analysis for you guys. Just give you our thoughts on that and what we're bringing. I, of course, am bringing orcs. Got a fun list kind of cooking around that I've been playing.
It is October.
It is October. So, yeah, but it's going to be in November, so.
I know. Unfortunately, you're going to miss your window.
Yeah, I know. Shit. So we'll do an episode before that RTT, and then we'll do a sum up after it as well.
All right, and everybody, thanks for listening. Take us out, Jeff.
Well, if you guys have any comments or criticism for Alan, email him at focusedfirepodcast@gmail.com. And it was thanks for joining us tonight, guys.
All right, thanks a lot. Take care, people.